Brian Mazurowski and Joe Beamer here with you on WBEN. Hope everyone's having a nice one out there. Joe, how's it going?
Doing well, Brian. Happy Thursday. Getting into this weekend.
You're going to be at the, early to be talking. I love when people say that, by the way. It'll be, you call somebody, like if you're at work, you're at a business, you might have this conversation, like every once in a while, you'll hear somebody slip up and say this on like even a Wednesday. Like, yeah, have a great weekend. Like, what? Whoa. We still got like half the week here. Or at least I do.
Yeah. I mean, we still have two more days, but you know, that we're in the final stretch. We're over the hump. Unlike the Bills, we're over the hump.
Yeah. You're at the auto show later today.
Yeah. Excited. Like I said, excited. I have no idea what to expect, and I think that's my favorite part about it.
Cars.
Well, I know.
Just to put you in the right frame of mind, that's one thing to expect.
I am aware of the cars, yeah.
We were speaking yesterday. You heard a little snippet of it this morning. Joe Emminger joined us yesterday in the morning on WBEN talking about the Metrorail extension project. Next week on Tuesday, I believe, we'll be joined by the NFTA to kind of get some of what they're thinking, their viewpoint of where this stands now, the Metrorail extension project. And I don't know. I want to just like tie up a loose end on that before we kind of get going today, because and this ties in a little bit to something that we will be talking about today, and that's just the internet and how terrible it is. But it just never ceases to amaze me the audacity, not Odyssey, the audacity of people online and just how brazen you can be in just saying, it's just crazy to me. And I have to remind myself that this is not something, well, I don't know. Because you see examples of this happening in person, in real life, more now than ever.
Because of the internet. Yeah, it spills over.
But just like how you tell yourself, like, no, this is not how people would act or talk to people in real life. This is only because they're an anonymous person online that they just go and spew nonsense all the time. But I was looking at reaction to Emminger's comments over the past couple of days on this project. And just how willy-nilly people throw out, willy-nilly, you like that one? That's a blast from the past.
Yeah.
how people will just throw out, right, just things that they say that I don't know. I just think, like, how could you? And it is, again, you know, I say the online discourse paints these two projects, the Metro Rail, the 33, just so different. You know, in one, it's, well, these are the concerns of the people who live by where the project's going to be. And the other is like all these NIMBYs, you know, just trying to stop progress in the neighborhood, get them out. Of course, you know, they're all losers or something like that. I just think it's absolutely ridiculous. And I saw another one yesterday talking about how, well, you know, what are you talking about? Your property value is going to go up. And that it does kind of stand to reason that might happen, that your property value would go up if you're right next to a metro line, if you're in that neighborhood by the boulevard. But it's not a given.
Right.
It's not a given. Just because it's happened that way in other cities doesn't mean it would happen in Western New York.
No.
Because not everybody wants to be living right next to a big public transit line and the trains and the, you know, noise or whatever it is that it brings. So it's not a given that you can't just state it as fact. And then people who talk about, if properties have to be taken by eminent domain, if they're right along the boulevard or, you know, increase there, how just brazenly throwing out these comments online like, oh, well, they'll be paid more than fair market value, so they should be fine with it. Like, give me a break. Someone comes up and tells you, get out. I know this is your home. You've been living here for the last 50 years. But I'm sorry, you have to get it. We're taking it. Eminent domain. You got to move out. You have 2 months. Find a new place and get out of your house. Oh, but don't worry. We're going to give you full market value. And no, it doesn't matter what you give you.
Right.
Like, you're telling somebody to get out of their home. And then I see these comments like, oh, well, you know, who just move these people and, you know, blah, blah,
like
blah.
It's so easy.
I know it's the internet. I know it's how people talk on the internet, especially when they're anonymous and they're just posting stuff and they're not actually face-to-face with somebody. But if you ever were face-to-face with somebody who was dealing with this situation, you would never, unless you are your mind is so totally gone from reading all these comments, you would never look that person in the face and be like, oh, Just give it up, buddy.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's your home. Just get out of here because five people want to ride the train.
But by the way, there are people who have been who are just so glued to social media all day, every day, that they do. It does spill into their
I was going to say, because I just watched a video of the Chicago. Do you see this? The Chicago City Council, and they voted to support a ceasefire in Gaza, and all the people who were in the crowd cheering and filming themselves on social media. I'm glad someone better tell Hamas that the war is over, by the way, because Chicago declared that it is. You might want to do a ceasefire in your own city.
I was going to say, is it nice there's nothing else going on in Chicago?
And everyone's cheering like they just saved the world. So maybe it has gone to where you're taking the internet to real life. I don't know.
Reality. But, another thing, the people that are commenting, I'd like to turn it around and say, hey, we're taking your house, right?
Exactly.
But I think the problem is the people commenting are either non-property owners, don't put themselves in that situation, they're just commenting, but again, turn it around, and they have something like, well, they'll never come and take my... Well, what if they did? Put yourself in that situation, and just, hey, you're up and moving in 2 months. And again, this is coming from someone who would like to see an expansion of the rail line, but I do think people who are affected get a loud voice, and I think all the concerns should be listened to. But the internet, Brian, it's a toxic, toxic thing.
Yeah, it is.
And it's getting more toxic. It's not getting better, especially social media.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
We'll have a lot on that here on the next hour on WBEN. A couple of entertainment news items, though, that we didn't get to this morning. I wanted to get to since you were in.
Yeah.
Hulu's about to do me dirty.
Uh-oh.
Joining Disney Plus and others, cracking down on password and account sharing.
Sorry about that.
I don't want to get Netflixed out of the Disney Plus and the Hulu. I don't even watch it. It's nice to know that I have it. I actually do watch the Hulu. If I want to watch a hockey game, it's easier to go through Hulu than the ESPN app.
Yep.
And they're all on one or the other. But anyways, they sent an email yesterday to subscribers notifying them of an updated subscriber agreement, one that explicitly bars sharing accounts outside of the user's household unless otherwise permitted by your service tier. You may not share your subscription outside of your household, which is bad news if you're me.
Yes, also,
I might get locked out of another service.
Also, everyone in my family, I hope you're listening. We're going to have to...
it might be.
But you know what? Maybe they'll offer the thing. We paid the extra for Netflix, so my parents could have it at their house. They do enough for us. We'll pay the extra. It's like $7.99 to add a house. So we're like, well, you do enough for us. We'll pay the $8 a month.
I mean, that's a hefty
fee on top of,
it's basically like a whole nother subscription.
Yeah. Yep.
But there you go. Hulu, Disney Plus might join Netflix in that.
And that's not good because I have like all my add-ons on Hulu. Like all my like premium, instead of getting another app, I just add it onto Hulu. So it's all in that library. But again, it's for the benefit of several households.
See, I don't like that though because like a lot of services offer that like, oh, get Showtime through whatever. And I'm always, what if I just get Showtime because what if I leave this app? Then isn't it complicated to, does my subscription automatically end to the other one?
That's a good point. It does. Like
it does?
You have to have one to have the other, yeah. But they build together. So like I have the Stars because Hightown's back on my Hulu, but it was prorated so it could match up with the monthly. And they were offering first 6 months for $5. So in 6 months when Hightown's off the air, I'll probably cancel it.
Yeah. Well, it's just your warning. If you're watching anything on either of those,
and they're not the last, it's gonna be Paramount and then Peacock. It's gonna go right down the line.
I don't like it. Yeah. I'm gonna be left with like one thing.
Everything
Pluto. Else is shared with everything. And then how about this? This is from Variety. I'm gonna read this to you, Joe, and see if you can spot my bone with Variety.
Okay.
Tracy Chapman. Set to perform Fast Car with Luke Combs at the Grammys. Is that this Sunday?
I believe so.
That would make sense when there's no football on.
Yeah.
If they're soon to be this Sunday or in like two Sundays. But anyways, Tracy Chapman, who has not performed in public in years, will return to the spotlight to perform a duet of Fast Car with Luke Combs at the Grammys on Sunday night. So there you go. Sources tell Variety. Combs, who had a massive hit with his cover version of Fast Car last year, was already announced as a performer on the show. Chapman's appearance comes as a significant surprise, as she was only performed for cameras three times since wrapping up her last tour in 2009 and resisted the popular demand to take advantage of the resurgence of the fast car phenomenon, that from Variety. So there you go. Do you know my my beef with Variety after that?
I was waiting for it. No.
Chapman's appearance comes as a significant surprise. Well, not anymore. No one's going to be surprised at the Grammys when she comes out to sing the second verse.
Yeah,
you ruined it. Spoiler alert, can I get one of those on there? You do that with every movie. No more surprises, I guess.
See, now you hear that and you're like, you know, oh, that's a reason to tune into the Grammys. See, I'm the complete opposite. I think, guess what? Monday morning, when I get a little free time, I'll go on YouTube and watch that performance. Like, I'm not going to sit through a show to watch the one performance that I might want to see.
Here's the thing. You can go on YouTube and watch a performance of her performing that song on, like, a million different...
But then together. Like, I'm excited to see them perform it together, but I'm not going to...
Oh, in HD or something? This, to me, is why I did not understand how this cover version got so big. Is because you can bring out the original person and perform it. Because this cover version of the song is not... I feel like a good cover, you're adding your spin on it. Maybe right. It's done in a different style or genre of music totally. It's like maybe the words are a little bit different. Just like something's different about it. But the fast car, you can literally interchange Luke Combs and Tracy Chapman. He just sang Fast Car.
Yeah.
The exact same way that she did.
Right.
And that's why I don't understand why it became a smash hit. It's because we already had this song.
Such a good song.
I just don't understand. It wasn't done in any different way. At least to my, like, to the naked ear, cursory listen, the way I've been doing it.
It was just Luke Combs singing it.
It was just a different person singing the song, not done in a special way or anything like that.
But I think it will be cool to see them perform it together. Again, by the way, the Grammys are this Sunday. Now that you said something, I remember they advertised during Price is Right yesterday.
That's how you know. I probably won't watch, but there you go. Surprise is broken.
Yeah, I will not be watching. But
no more surprise. No more surprise. All right. So anyways, Joe, we were getting to this throughout the morning. You've heard us talk about what happened on Capitol Hill yesterday, where there was a big hearing, heated hearing on Capitol Hill.
It was.
Senate Judiciary Committee accusing chief executives of Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Snapchat, Discord, all these things, of failing to protect kids who use their platforms. Now, if you have been listening before 9 a little bit, we talked with Stephen Portnoy, who was at the hearing, about this. And there is a distinction to be made, right? Because the hearing itself was about child exploitation on these platforms, of people using these social media platforms to do disgusting and definitely illegal things. And if social media should be responsible for policing that, or if they should be held responsible in any way for crimes committed on there, or if they're just, you know, the medium and people go, it's almost like, you know, go back 40 years and say, you know, hey, we conducted an illegal operation over the phone, and you are suing AT&T or Bell Telephone Company
right.
over this. You know, should they be held responsible? They own the phone lines. They provided the service that this illegal activity was conducted over. Or is it just the people who did it? That is a much simpler way, maybe, of looking at why these social media platforms were on Capitol Hill yesterday.
Yes. Phone lines a little different. Right, I mean, it's
a little different, but this is like the modern,
yeah.
Like kind, they want to see themselves as not as a utility, but as like a forum that just kind of exists. Like we provide just this platform,
right.
And what people do with it is out of our control.
But you illustrate how complex communication is today than it was 40 years ago. I think that's a good illustration of that.
Now. That's a lengthy discussion to be had, and that is its own separate issue. There was another issue on display, and that's with parents who were sitting behind Mark Zuckerberg, and Mark Zuckerberg turning around. It's on, I believe, the cover of New York Post or Daily News or one of these papers, and addressing them, parents who lost kids to suicide or something of that effect, who are blaming social media because of its negative mental health aspects that it gives to kids. And it's been well documented, something we've talked about before, but it is a separate issue. So you had two separate issues, both talking about the danger of social media, but both kind of playing out at the same time. And I'm, for today's purposes, I am kind of interested more so in the second one and the mental health impact that social media has had. 803-0930 if you want to join both either of us throughout the morning here, either by call or text. But Joe, it raises a good question because it's not terribly unlike that other issue. But when it comes to holding social media companies responsible for the negative impacts that we've seen social media cause on kids, you know, at 5:50 this morning, we're talking about glass doors on bathrooms and cameras in bathrooms at schools around the country because they're filming TikTok videos and vaping, right, and, you know, doing whatever else in the bathroom. They have to put a stop to it in school. The question comes down to, though, when these negative impacts surface, when you start to see them in kids, in teens, who is to blame? Do you blame Mark Zuckerberg for creating the platform, or is somebody else to blame on this?
Do I think that there could be more precautions taken from Facebook? I guess, but I don't know that world. But I do think that's where your provider example comes in place. He created this space, and now what people choose to do on it, I don't think is what he intended 20 years ago, Brian. So I don't think it all falls on Mark Zuckerberg. I think it falls a lot on, we have people in this world, unfortunately, minors in this world, who cannot put the phone down. They can't get off social media. They can't get off TikTok. Their day is consumed, you know, a fourth of it school, three-fourths of it TikTok, Facebook, Twitter. That is a huge problem. And I don't think you can point to one person for that problem. It is a problem with minors in this country. It's a problem, I think, with everyone. And definitely you are seeing mental health impacts on it. It's also, I always go back to this when it comes to social media. We're not talking to each other anymore. We're talking through a forum. We're talking through social media. That's got to have some kind of negative impact.
I have an interesting that really have not seen at many places, but just over the past couple of days, I have an interesting chart on that I'll bring up in just a little bit. I want to go to the phones. Jeff and Kenmore, you're on WBEN. Good morning, Jeff. How's it going?
Hey, how's it going? Hey, I'm listening to your station, listening to you guys this morning, and listening yesterday to that part of the hearing. I mean, to me, it reminds me of like the 80s when they were trying to blame metal music for suicide and kids listening to records and trying to blame them for, you know, they listen to this music and they're committing suicide, blaming Ozzy Osbourne and some other stuff. And they wanted some restrictions on the albums, you know, who can purchase it. And I don't know if that really stopped any issue or whatever.
But a little sticker.
They talk about like blaming phone lines, you know, meaning, you know, the phone company's responsible. I think it's the algorithms in these. I don't think the social media itself completely is at fault that it's available. It's the algorithms that they promote this negativity that escalates the situation instead of de-escalating a problem. You know, they want more activity. The more activity, the more ads, the more money they make. So they, you know, they want people to keep interacting on the negative points of stuff, not on the positives.
Hey, Jeff, I love the point, and thank you for the call. 803-0930 if you want to get in with us. We'll be back after the break. The algorithm is made by the company. I mean, you have to keep that in mind, too. It's 927 BMAZ and Beamer on WBEN. Brian Mazurowski and Joe Beamer with you on WBEN. Hope everyone's having a nice Thursday out there. Joe will be at the auto show throughout the day today after he's done here. So getting ready for that.
Yeah. Going to get a nice haircut, Brian. You know, I'm going to be outside the studio. Maybe it's a good idea. And then go to the gym, and then I'll be there.
You don't look particularly shaggy. Oh, getting a little pump up before you go see everyone?
Yeah, you know.
If you see Joe, he'll be like behind a table just doing 5 push-ups just to before he goes.
Well, usually I go to the gym at 2 on Thursdays. I got to rework my schedule a little bit, but it's totally worth it. Like I said, I'm real excited to go see all the cars.
We're talking about social media today after this hearing on Capitol Hill yesterday, which really kind of hit on two different things. The hearing was on one issue, important issue, one that could be its own show entirely. A lot of the noise inside the hearing, I don't want to discredit it just by saying noise, but a lot of the talk out of the hearing was about the other thing we've been talking about, social media, a lot, and that is the negative impact that it has. Teen mental health is really what you hear all the time. But you could expand that to just how, you know, socially, how even adults are in public, and how we all have been acting. What is the impact of this new social media as we're still really getting used to it? You know, right? Like, you could call it 20 years old. It's probably more like 15.
Right. I mean, it was, 20 years is when it came out. To just college students.
So like 2009, 2010
yeah.
really is when it started to explode, and you got everybody on some form of social media, and you know, maybe even in the last 10 years when, I don't know, it really took hold into the form that we see right now.
I remember in my pop culture class, we had to maintain a Twitter account for the entire semester, and this was 2009, and I remember thinking how dumb that was. Like, every day? I'm not going to be on the site every day. You had to make a post every day and maintain the account for the semester. And I just thought that was the most ridiculous thing, not knowing that the app that was Twitter, now X, would become what it is.
It used to be the people would make fun of it, saying, nobody cares that you ate a cheeseburger for lunch. Like, that was the conversation.
How innocent.
Twitter.
I want to go back to that. And I want to go back to hearing about people's cheeseburgers.
It's a different conversation in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Yeah. It's changed just a little bit since it first came out. 803-0930 to join us here on WBEN. On the text board this morning, somebody has this comment. Because one of the questions is, they're taking aim at Mark Zuckerberg, at, you know, the heads of these social media companies. When we're talking about the mental health aspect of this, when we're talking about the impact it's had on kids, it gets all the hype, but really adults too, but the social impact that it's had on society, how much blame do you put on a Mark Zuckerberg, on the top people at these companies? And on the text board, somebody chimes in saying, I'm having trouble holding these companies accountable. Reminds me of suing McDonald's for burns on hot coffee, personal responsibility. Is it possible even for Facebook or whoever to monitor all of the users? And that's kind of part of the argument that social media has. It's like, you'd need the world's craziest supercomputer, or a team of just countless people monitoring every single thing that everybody's doing to be able to do what you want us to do.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think of adults and social media, and I say self-control, right? Put the phone down, log off the computer. When it comes to children, I mean, Brian, it's not like it was when we were kids. I mean, my parents would say, you get 20 minutes of computer time. Like, it was a computer in the basement where everyone's around you. Right? Everyone could see what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that you had 24. There was a computer in my room that was for SimCity. Okay? There was no internet in my room. That was for SimCity and NFL math. If I want to go on the internet, that's on the one computer downstairs. Times have changed. And you know, I do think, you know, parental guidance, but I also think that there needs to be this message of, put the phone down, get off Facebook, and go talk to someone. You know, if you see something that affects you, we had AOL Instant Messenger back in the day. I told you a story during the break. You know, I in middle school, it was either middle school or high school, I had someone tell me, you know, that I was disgusting and ugly. I took it, you know, that's sad. But I X'd out, I ignored it, I went on with my life. I think, you know, you see something negative, well, don't keep on fishing for more negativity. Log off the app. Go find something else to do.
Yeah, I think it's, you can't even compare the two, though.
You can't, it's the closest thing I have is my experience in high school. I completely understand. It's a weak comparison, but that's the closest to cyberbullying that I can bring out.
Here is why, and I mentioned, you know, I saw something interesting the other day. Here is why you can't compare it. Right? This is a tweet from John. A tweet. You know, you find on social media. You know, it's kind of ironic that, you know, everything we're talking about, I end up finding through some social media. It's from a researcher who is looking at a new survey on American life done by Gallup. And it's come to an ideological divide between young men and women in many countries around the world. And this person writes that it's one of the most important social trends unfolding today, provides the answer to several puzzles. And as we become increasingly more online, there's always been an ideology gap between men and women, right? You view the world differently. You just always have.
Right.
But it hasn't been by that much, right? Like ideology of people 18 to 29 would change based on if you're a man or a woman. But it's not that big of a divide until around 2010, 2015. What happens around then, as we were just saying? Social media.
It explodes.
The gap widens just significantly between men and women. I'm looking at these charts that show South Korea, the United States, Germany, the UK. And in all of them, you have a little bit of a gap between men and women and how they're viewing this one as political ideology, you know, liberal versus conservative. And then this huge explosion happening around 2010, 2015, to where women trend way more one way, men trend way more the other way. I'll let you guess which way it is. I don't think it's too important for the discussion, but you can probably guess which way that is. It's what this tells you, though, like to kind of at the end of all, is that, and this is Jonathan Haidt, who I found this through. He's written a couple of books on this topic, which I would recommend to any parent out there. He adds, the proliferation of smartphones and social media mean that young men and women now increasingly inhabit separate spaces and experience separate cultures. So think about that. People are always on their phone. They're living in different worlds. They're not always on their phone doing the same thing. They're on their phone doing their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're literally living in different worlds than each other. And men and women will be different. And think about all the times, oh, it's so hard to find a guy nowadays. It's so hard to find a girl nowadays. Well, the same number of people out there, right? Like, you got the same. It shouldn't be that different. Why is it so different? Well, because ideologically, what you want in life, what you expect out of one another, what you think you want, has never been more different in the history of humankind. And it directly correlates with the amount of time people are spending on their smartphones in this alternate reality. So there's one of the examples of how different it is. It's not just being online, it's being engrossed in your cell phone, in social media, in your own world, whatever that is. And I would even say it doesn't have to be social media. It could even be Candy Crush or something, but it's whatever you're doing on your phone puts you in that different world.
I talk about this all the time. It's in your own echo chamber. I mean, take that into politics, Brian. Why are there half of the country thinks that, you know, Joe Biden's going to win in a landslide, and the other half thinks that Donald Trump's going to win in a landslide? Because they go on their phone, and they are just having an echo chamber, people of their opinion, of one side of the aisle, telling them all this stuff. And that's why you have such a different view on what's going on with recent events, with politics. You see it in all forms of life. It's because now more than ever, if you just want to be consumed by only things that you agree with, only things that, you know, pertain to you, you're in this echo chamber, and everything else is a foreign language.
And so you go back to that text that I brought up earlier, and he used the McDonald's hot coffee. I would use McDonald's, but in a different, or fast food in general, in a different sense. You know, it is almost like, in my mind, when I see these, and they're heartbreaking stories. And you do understand the impact, like social, you can draw that direct line, the mm-hmm. social media and time spent there and what happened to the brain of a child, right? But at the same time, I can't help but look at this and think, this is like a parent having an obese child and suing McDonald's.
Right.
And you can draw that direct line between your food consumed by this person, resulting in what you see before you right now. But who's putting the cheeseburger in the hand? It's the parent.
Yep.
And that to me is, it's the end-all, be-all discussion. It's the tough discussion. It's one we talked about a couple times here on the show, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
That is the one. It's the parent putting the screen in the kid's hand. I'm not quite there yet. I'm almost there, right? Like, I'm almost at that age. I've got my kid's birthdays coming up next week. I've had somebody ask me, my oldest is turning 4. Oh, hey, what about a tablet? You know, one of these cheap. No, no way.
Right.
My wife goes, yeah, I said no. But like next year. And I go, no. no, absolutely no way. And I can already tell this will be a point of friction sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. It's so hard for parents to look at the world around you and say no to it. But if you want to prevent these things at the end of the day, there is a surefire way of doing it. It's not lobbying through a senator or a congressman or whoever else to ask these, you know, Mark Zuckerberg or whoever to come before them in Washington and say, hey, can you think about doing this? And we'll pass a law and we'll do this or that. No, it's to not put the device in the hands of a kid in the first place.
That's right.
And it's way easier said than done. I don't fully understand that yet, self-admittingly. But is it not the answer? Like, is it not the answer? And I don't want to say it is. It's so matter of fact, again. But that is, at the end of the day, what it could come down to, what it could be stopped by.
Yeah. I mean, I'm obviously far away from it, Brian. But, you know.
Not that far.
But I'm thinking of something that I can, when the internet finally does become a thing that needs to be in use, I always am going to want it to be something that I can monitor, right? Like, I don't, and this is going to sound, because I don't want my kid to be missing out either, but I don't want my kid to have a phone in his pocket all day, right? I don't want him to have access to all this stuff all day. I call me old school. I still want, when he goes on the internet, I'm going to want to be able to monitor it no matter what. And
I love
that's
going
to be very difficult.
I love that. That's not old school. That's not old school.
It sounds old school, though.
But is like old school is not having the internet.
Yeah.
Like, old school is not monitoring. Think about growing up. I know you mentioned, you know, oh, everyone can see what you're doing on the family computer, wherever. But you are not. I was never monitored. I don't think anybody growing up who I was friends with was ever monitored to what you did
right
online. My parents had no idea what songs I was downloading on LimeWire.
Yeah.
You had no idea. Because that's what I want. I don't want to monitor my kids because I want them to have some sort of freedom. The problem is you can't just put this untethered freedom of a supercomputer that fits in your pocket in their hands and have it both ways. So what would I opt for? I would opt for phone.
That internet that you mentioned doesn't exist.
It's a totally different thing than when we were kids. We'll go to the phones. Bill in Tonawanda, you're on WBEN. Bill, how's it going?
It's going all right. I just wanted to say, I think it's not a black and white issue. I think the companies need to do more. What? I don't know. I agree that it's not all on them. It's on the parents. Currently for my 11-year-old son, he has a phone that restricts those apps, which we're going to try to hold out that he doesn't use that until he's much older, as far as that goes. Use those apps, I mean. But I think that one thing that the apps could do is, because right now anybody can get on, really. If you give your kid a smartphone, which I disagree with, but, you know, we gave him a smartphone, but seriously restricted. But if you give your kid an unrestricted cell phone, they can pretty much get onto Facebook and whatever easily. And I think one thing the companies could do to help the parents out is to charge. Like when Twitter was talking about, oh, we're going to charge you to get Twitter. I think that's not a bad idea if you have to have a credit card. Because now it's all on the parents, essentially, to allow it, you know,
forces them to pay attention. Hey, Bill, just because we're going to run out of time eventually here, I want to ask you, what are your conversations with other parents like about this? Because to me, it's almost impossible for one parent on their own, when everyone else has a device, everyone else is on social media, whatever, to tell your kid no. I feel like you need a coalition of like-minded parents who are going to together stick up.
Yeah, to be honest, I have not had this discussion with other parents, really. I can't say for sure what the consensus is.
Well, Bill, thanks for the call. That is key. It's like, I'm not going to stand here on a soapbox with a, you know, 4 and a 1-year-old and be like, you got to keep your kids off of, because I haven't had that yet. And to deny, one child, when you see it everywhere else, it's like the old, it takes a village. This idea, if you really do believe it, it is going to take more than just you. Because you're right, it is impossible for a parent to just kind of say, hey, you're going to be the one kid, to your own son or daughter. You're going to be the one kid who's not involved in any of the stuff that all your friends are. That's not like a trip to Disney or something like that, by the way. This is a 24/7 ongoing, this is a part of your everyday life. It's not a one-time event. You're not going to that concert. You're not doing this. You're not taking part in the social sphere that everyone else is. You can't do it alone. You need backup.
Yeah.
I think it's the most important conversation that parents should be having amongst each other. You know, your kids' friends and stuff. What are you thinking? What are you doing with this? And Joe, you said you're not at that stage yet. You are, though. Because how many times do you go out to restaurants and see a kid with a tablet in front of them?
That's right.
Now, that's not social media, but it's still staring at a screen. We got a text in from somebody who said they're a speech therapist, I believe. And pediatric speech therapist. Seeing the damage that's been done by kids watching nothing but YouTube and having their eyes just solely... Yep. On an iPad, not paying attention to other people. So even before you have the social media conversation, it does start with the screen.
And that does bother me. And again, I don't know the situation, so I'm not judging. I'm just saying, when I was a kid, if the family went out, the family went out. And what did you do? You talked. Maybe you and another family went out and you talked to each other. You talked to one another. And now when you see the youngest kid has a tablet in front of them, they're not partaking in the conversation. I just can't imagine that's good for, development, for advancement. And, what happens when in 10 years when you want them to be part of the conversation at the table, but they're used to just watching YouTube while everyone else has a conversation? Again, I'm not there, Brian. I don't know the situation. I just can't. I can't think that's good for the future of this child's communication and social life.
Somebody else. When we grew up, we also had landlines. Would you want a phone for your kids in an emergency? You can. But 2 points. This. You can have a phone without it being a smartphone.
Yes.
You can have a phone that makes phone calls.
Right.
Those exist. Those are, and they have a ton of kid, by the way, kid-friendly devices that do exactly that and nothing else. But also, again, I didn't have a phone. I had a normal childhood, I rode my bike places and did whatever. I never had a phone, but there were phones at places. Other people have phones. There's phones in buildings. There's phones, wherever else. I don't know. I just never remember, there being such a hubbub of you're out of reach. We can't text you right now, right? That didn't exist.
I remember it was an overnight school trip, and my dad gave me his cell phone. Because, again, they still had a landline, right? So it wasn't like he needed the phone to answer calls at home. They had a landline for that. So that's what would happen in our family. We had the family cell phone. It was, just a brick phone. And if you were going overnight or something and you needed it, you had it. What did that phone do? It made phone calls. That's it. Didn't have games.
But I love even the idea of that. You're going overnight someone. Were your friends Amish?
No, it was a school trip. It was like a camping school trip. And my parents were saying, hey, You have a phone. Didn't do anything. It's not like I could text or take pictures on it. It was just a phone that called.
Yeah, but like when it's, there's a phone wherever you're going, too. Yeah. It's not like you would be out of reach.
I think my parents wanted to justify the monthly bill for the cell phone we didn't use.
the $12,000, like those first phone bills or something like that. All right, Joe, we're going to be hearing from you throughout the day. You're at the Auto Show.
I will be talking with Tom twice an hour, 2 to 6. Hope to see you there. And hope to see some cool cars. I think... I'm excited to see some cool cars. I'm excited to get the Auto Show feel and excited to see the listeners. So hopefully you'll stop by.
All right, check out Joe. He's at the Auto Show. You got David coming up next after the news with Lucas on WBEN.